Jack glanced momentarily at the pristine salt. Not a single footprint or spore showed in the loose material.
Nobody here before us.
Not here, anyway.
Trying to gauge the slope of the cliff, it appeared that the rock was less severely angled inward to their right, toward the east.
This way. Doc, use your coat.
As the companion started forward once more, Doc removed his frock coat and tied the arms around his waist. Now, hanging on the ground, the material smoothed over their prints in the salt to disguise their passing. It wouldn't hide their presence from a human tracker, but might be good enough for the machines. Christy slid a backpack over her shoulder.
Wish we had a working wag.
Mildred looked at the display of racing bicycles inside a dark sporting goods store. Bikes were good for doing a wreck in a city and able to go places no motorcycle could because of their weight. But while most of the bicycle frames in the front window were badly corroded from the salt air, the better titanium frames were in excellent condition. The problem was the tires. The majority were only tatters of rubber draped over the shiny rims. There might be some in the back storeroom, but finding enough of the right size to fit 7 of the titanium bikes would take hours. Time better spent making distance.
Pity about these two-wheelers.
Need a lot of oil to get those moving again. A hell of a lot more than I carry, and there's not a garage or hardware store in sight.
Furniture store in the corner. Got a couple of lamps on display. See 'em? Just drain the lightweight oil on top, and there's enough heavy machine oil on the bottom to lube 100 bikes. Good for blasters, too.
An exemplary notion, my young friend.
Doc clasped the boy on the shoulder in good humor.
Highly laudable. Is this your own idea?
Learned it at Brody's school.
Ryan suddenly came to attention. All thoughts of the bicycles immediately vanished.
Heads up, we found them. 10 o'clock high.
Facing in that direction, the others took a moment to study the pre-dark buildings, then scanned the top of the cliff. Barely visible against the light-colored sand of the desert was a dark shape traveling along the very rim of the sinkhole, a cloudy rain of loose stones and sand falling in its wake. JB peered through the navy long eyes.
Dark night. That's a Lav 25. Got to be Gaza.
Or Hawk.
Ryan backtracked the sand cloud of the Warwag's passage. It reached only a half mile or so. Good enough.
Okay, if they're going left, then we go right. Best to put more distance between us and hopefully cover ground they haven't yet. We've got to locate some way out before they find a way down.
No prob. Need cracks to climb. Gaza need highway for big wag.
But the APC has a winch and can easily support its own weight.
Walking along the soft salt, Ryan frowned. Fireblast. He hadn't considered that possibility before. Turning to ask JB a question, he stopped as something dropped from the bare rocks above to land near the companions. Incredibly, it was a humanoid figure with skin the color and texture of the rock. Male sexual organs dangled obscenely between its scrawny legs, the hands and feet covered with rippling suckers.
Sticky!
Ryan fired his blaster at point-blank range. The creature recoiled, hooting in pain, thrashing its limbs wildly. Doc and Christy frantically jerked out of the way to avoid touching the creature, and it fell to the salty ground, a gaping wound pulsating in its shoulder. A thin fluid trickled from the ragged opening, but then it started to close, and the sticky rose again, its naked legs already changing into the color of the powdery salt.
It's a goddamn chameleon, Sticky!
Mildred pumped 2 rounds into the creature's face, going for the eyes. Both orbs exploded into a gelatinous mass, and the pure white Sticky fell to the ground. Then several more of the disguised creatures dropped from the rocky overhang into the middle of the group, and the companions suddenly found themselves attacked from every side. The 8 heavy wheels chewed the ground along the edge of the cliff, sending a salty dust cloud across the pre-dark city. Baron Gaza didn't like it. To give away your position before a fight was bad tactics, but he hoped it wouldn't be noticeable mixed in with the smoke from the burning buildings. Besides, there was no other choice. He needed to be this close to the rim of the cliff to see the buildings below. The Baron had little hope of spotting the hated outlanders, but Allison was standing in the aft turret, ready to unleash the 25mm cannon at the first sight of Ryan or the others. The heat of the rising sun hadn't yet turned the desert into an oven, and the Baron had the top hatch raised to admit a pleasant breeze into the war wag. The smell of hot metal, oil, diesel fumes, and sweaty bodies had been making the interior of the APC almost unbearable, and he now bitterly regretted ripping out the air conditioner to save fuel. The Baron had no idea how the traitor could stand the reek of humanity for those long treks across the nukescape. In tumbling majesty, the dying city was spread out to the left, the light of the fires fading in the sunlight. But during the night, the sky had glowed from the reflected flames. Entire blocks had been reduced to blackened skeletons of twisted steel from the raging fires. Smaller structures were ablaze, filled with flames that occasionally exploded, throwing out a spray of burning debris. Lines of cars were burning, like knots in a fuse, until the flames reached a pre-dark gas station and created new detonations, fireballs rising into the sky and fading away long before the sound of their creation echoed to the distant observers. The sheer waste of the precious materials was a knife in his gut, but the man accepted the loss and concentrated on trying to steal what he could before the rest of the city was consumed by the growing conflagration. Reaching for the water bag, the Baron turned his head for a moment when a descending buzzard jerked his attention back to the metropolis below. What was it? Slamming on the brakes, Gaza downshifted until the wag slowed to a shuddering halt. Almost immediately, the dust cloud in its wake washed over the vehicle, blocking out the world for a few moments. Turning in the navigator seat, Kathleen silently asked her husband what was happening. Gaza ignored the woman, and grabbing hold of the overhead hatch, pulled himself from the driver's seat and climbed down the angled hull of the APC to rush to the crumbling edge of the cliff. Partially blocked by the smoke, he saw a parking lot about a block in filled with military vehicles, 4x4 trucks, Hummers, a lone LAV-25, and several huge tanks. It was a convoy of some sort, stopped for lunch or fuel and caught in the salt fall, never to move again. Until now. The machines looked in perfect condition from this distance, and Gaza could barely breathe at the idea of how much ammo and fuel had to be there just waiting to be taken. For a wild moment, he toyed with the notion of trying to get one of the tanks to the desert, then abandoned the idea as impossible. The steep sides of the sinkhole would be tough for even a strong man to climb. And so far, he hadn't even found a trail that would handle the lumbering APC, much less a gigantic pre-dark tank. Those were virtual prisoners of the city from their own weight and size. But the contents could be scavenged, every drop of fuel and every live round of ammo.
"Wake up, my dears. Time to work."
The Baron went to the external winch and released the cable. With a bang, the rear doors of the APC slammed aside, and two of his wives came running around the machine, with blasters in their hands. As the wife in charge, Allison would stay with the APC, and Della would keep a watch on Denal to make sure the newlywed didn't run off during the scavenging. Which meant the task was middle wife work.
"I'm sending down Carol."
Gaza wrapped a length of the greasy cable around an arm.
"Latch the hook onto anything you can, and we'll haul the stuff up here for sorting. Pay special attention for weapon lockers. Those will be large boxes resembling a green plastic coffin. If you find something big, I'll send down Kathleen."
Shifting the boxy Ingram rapid fire to hang out of the way across her back, Carol nodded dumbly. The small brunette was on point for the wreck. With Allison watching from the turret atop the APC, Kathleen helped Carol loop the woven steel cable around her body, under the arms and between her legs for reliable support. It was a long fall onto hard rock. Gaza stayed with the winch and kept a hand on the control box, taking his cue from Kathleen when to spool out some slack. Careful of her balance, Carol eased herself over the side until she was dangling freely. The loops shifted position as the metallic length fully supported her weight, and for a heart-stopping moment, she thought they were coming off. But then the steel hook cinched firm, and the cables tightened securely about her clothing. Glancing up at Kathleen, Carol waved a hand to show that everything was okay. Turning toward the APC, Kathleen wiggled a finger at her husband, and Gaza began to feed out the cable nice and slow. Long minutes passed as the woman descended into the city, and the main reel was getting low when Kathleen made a slowing gesture. Gaza complied, and then after a few more yards, she clenched a fist, and the Baron cut the power and set the brake. Staying in the cable, Carol unlimbered her rapid fire and looked over the area for any immediate dangers. Black birds were eating the ancient corpses, but no other creatures were in sight. However, she made a mental note to stay clear of the sewer grates and any dark shadows. Releasing the catch on the heavy steel hook, Carol slithered out of the cable and loosely attached it to a piece of salt-corroded machinery sticking out of the ground. Whatever its original purpose, the thing would now function well as an anchor. Checking the spare clips in her belt, Carol glanced at the cliff and got a reassuring wave from Kathleen, her husband standing nearby with a long blaster held at his waist. Good enough.